This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The great Robert Capa defined the creed of the combat photographer when he said, "If your pictures aren't good enough, you're not close enough." Capa, famed for his pictures of the Spanish Civil War and the World War II, died when he stepped on a landmine while accompanying French troops in 1954. He was the first photojournalist to be killed in Vietnam and the patron saint of all who came after. That description comes from Lost Over Laos, a new book that tells the story of four of Robert Capa's successors who were killed when the South Vietnamese helicopter they were riding in crashed in 1971. Its author, Richard Pyle, served as Saigon bureau chief of the Associated Press for 5 years. He went on to other assignments, including wars in Lebanon and the Persian Gulf, but Pyle writes, "The crash that killed Larry Burrell, Henri Huet, and Kent Potter and Keizaburo Shimamoto was a story without an ending." He and his collaborator, the Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer Horst Voss, fervently felt it needed one and returned to the remote hills of southwestern Laos to find their friends and colleagues to tell their stories and, along the way, tell the story of the Saigon Press Corps. Join the conversation. What do you remember about how the Vietnam War was covered by journalists, and is it the words or the pictures that you recall? And how did that information inform your thoughts on the war? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Later in the program, we'll talk about the ethical dilemma that some combat reporters face in Iraq. They need to protect themselves and their equipment, but the use of armed guards raises issues about the lines between journalists and combatants and the Geneva Convention. First, though, Richard Pyle joins us from our bureau in New York, and good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
Tell me about the first time you left Saigon as a you weren't a cub reporter, but you certainly were new to the Saigon Press Corps, and your first mission, out of the capital.
First time out of the capital was a flight up northeast of Saigon to observe a B-52 strike, which, if you've never seen one up close, is a pretty startling event. And we were circling at about 2,000 feet, and all of a sudden the land about a mile away in front of us just opened up in what I describe as large brown flowers with red centers looming across the landscape. And then came the shockwave, which was actually visible. You could see these shockwaves rippling toward us, and we were kicked around in the air like a canoe in a whirlpool, and it passed. And we never saw the aircraft. We only had a radio contact that told us where to look and when, and that was the extent of it. Afterward, we went over the site, and it was a moonscape. You couldn't tell whether anything had ever been alive down there.
As a newcomer in Vietnam, no mud on your boots yet. I guess your camouflage was still had creases in it. How did you regard giants like Larry Burrows, who was one of if not the most respected photographer in Vietnam at the time?
Well, you know, you'd heard about some of these guys before you went to Vietnam, and when you met them, they were giants. They were people who were already famous, but you met them, and like any time you meet famous people, they turn out to be human beings. And these guys were like that. Larry was like that. Peter Arnett, who was a Pulitzer Prize winner. My colleague, Horst Voss, co-editor on this book, was another one. There were many of these people, which I met for the first time, and we became friends and colleagues without too much ado.
Larry Burrows was a photographer for Life magazine, grown up as a young boy in London. And you describe a lot of his work, but tell us about a series of photographs he took that were dubbed under the title of Yankee Papa 13.
Well, this was his classic Vietnam essay. Larry had time to work on essays for the magazine, which sometimes took a lot of time. This was one of them. He made several trips out with his Marine helicopter unit. They were providing support for the South Vietnamese at the time, and he made several trips in which were basically uneventful until this particular one, where they got into a shooting situation. Another helicopter was shot down, and the one he was on landed to try, and the door gunner crew chief got off and went to the other helicopter to try to rescue wounded guy, and Larry went with him, and the bullets were zinging around his head, and he was taking these pictures. They got the wounded guy on the helicopter and flew him back. Well, the pilot who was wounded died. Larry shot this whole thing Capa style, up close and personal. And the final picture in the essay is of the crew chief slumped on a footlocker, just sobbing, exhausted at the end of the day. It's a very moving picture, and it summarizes the whole experience. It's an astonishing series, which has been widely reprinted and is one of the most remembered photo essays of the entire Vietnam War.
You say Kappa style, up close and personal. A lot of people, as you know, write about, particularly about combat photographers, as some of them having a death wish.
Yeah, I know that's often said. I don't. I met some people I thought were pretty crazy. He didn't use very good judgment. Whether it's a death wish or not is another matter. Horst says that he never met anybody who actually had a death wish. I'm not sure exactly what the term means, except that people get overly reckless and careless and show off. They can get themselves into trouble pretty quickly in a place like that because it's quite unforgiving.
And yet you write admiringly of your great friend, Henri Huet, who the incident that made him famous as a photographer, I guess, happened when somebody described him as the bravest man they'd ever seen.
That's right. It was a typical combat situation. Henri and a reporter named Bob Pousse, an AP reporter, were together on an operation with the 1st Cav, and they got into a situation where they were basically surrounded by enemy forces, North Vietnamese troops, and were pinned down for most of the day. And they were in a situation where Henri had to help carry the wounded, and they were expected to carry weapons and defend themselves if it became necessary, which it turned out it didn't. But all through this action, Henri was moving around shooting pictures, much to the astonishment of some of the officers, one of whom said he's the bravest man he ever saw. Henri was like that. He was born in Vietnam of French-Vietnamese parents. He grew up in France, went back to Vietnam, and spent his life photographing the agony of his native land. He was the most interesting and sympathetic man I think I've ever met in my life. Everybody who knew Henri adored him. And one of the reasons that they adored him, and we all did, was that he was such a consummate professional, always ready to help a younger person, to reach out to people. He could melt any hostility in the field. Just a wonderful character and absolutely brave. But he also understood the risks and how to calculate them to maximize his own safety.
You knew the other two photographers less well, and you learned a lot about them writing this book. But I wanted you to tell us about an incident after Henri returned from that story and started to brought his went at first, I guess, to the AP office before he even took a shower or anything else. And Larry Burroughs walked into the office.
Yeah, Henri was in the AP photo bureau in Saigon, and they were souping his film, putting prints out on the table to make selections to send to New York by radio photo that day. And Henri was still in his muddy fatigues, and he was writing out the caption material that would go with the pictures. And Larry Burroughs, who had been on some other assignment, heard about this incident that involved Henri, and he came in the office to see the pictures, and he looked at them on the table there, and he looked at one picture of a picture of a medic who was himself wounded while administering. He was wounded, but administering to another wounded guy. And Larry looked at that, and he said, "That's a Life cover." And Larry said, "I'm going to tell my editors to use this series." And he did. He told Life that they should use Henri's AP series, and Life did, gave it 6 pages, and put that medic on the cover, just as Larry said they probably should.
Richard Pyle tells the stories of 4 combat photographers lost over Laos. He's our guest from our bureau in New York. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to T.D., who's on the line with us from New York.
Hi, Richard. This is T.D. Allman. I don't know if you remember my name.
Sure do.
I exposed the secret CIA war in Laos, among other stuff. And you know, I knew all of them, but I remember Larry very clearly. But, you know, Kent Potter meant a lot to me. He was such a fine young person. And I guess, you know, there are all 2 kinds of foreign correspondents: those who look like Billy in The Year of Living Dangerously, and those who look like Mel Gibson. And let's just say he looked like Mel Gibson. And I remember it was right after the invasion of Cambodia, and the Americans had a party at the former French Cirque Sportif in Phnom Penh. And I climbed up and jumped off this 30-foot diving board. And Kent was down there. I said, "Come on, Kent, come up, take a dive." And he was so honest. He said, "I'm afraid of heights." And I remember I was at Oxford when he, I believe, when he was killed in the helicopter crash. And I, of course, you know the last moments of life in a helicopter. And I always remembered that. And I still think what a pity it was that, you know, we lost somebody like him. And, of course, great people of other great talent like Larry and the others. And I'm so glad you have plucked these names from history, and that they will be remembered. They were very brave and good men who gave their lives for the truth.
The interesting thing about Kent was that he was, when he arrived in Saigon in 1968, as far as we know, he was the youngest person ever accredited to the military commander as a journalist. And when he was killed, he just turned 23. He was the youngest man killed among the press in the war, and I believe that if he had lived longer, he would have become as accomplished a photographer as Henri Huet and Larry Burroughs, because he certainly had the talent.
And, well, being a writer, I've been often told by photographers I'm no judge of that. But he was, I'm not entitled to judge that, but he was just a wonderful human being. And, of course, Larry is remembered not only for his extraordinary photography, but for what a gracious person he was.
Absolutely.
And Kent, it's so good that his name is being remembered, as are the others. Congratulations on your book.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tell us a little bit, Richard Pyle, about the reason that these four men happened to find themselves in a helicopter with, seven other people.
Yeah, it was a South Vietnamese helicopter. This was the operation called Lam Son 719. Early 1971, the South Vietnamese decided to invade Laos and cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail. In a way, it was a repeat of the Cambodian incursions of the previous spring, which had limited success. And this time, the South Vietnamese and their American sponsors hoped that by cutting the trail, they could buy time for Nixon's Vietnamization program. And if they did it at the right time in February and March, it would probably, because the rainy season followed, it would shut down the trail of supply operations of Hanoi's supply operations for months and give the Saigon forces a lot of time to get to build their forces and so forth as the Americans left. So on this particular operation, the press was, for the first time that I know of in the war, we were barred from the battlefield. The Americans wouldn't take us in on their support helicopters, and the Saigon forces wouldn't either. Then on the third day, General Lam, who was the officer in charge of this operation, decided to take a tour of his forward positions in Laos, and he allowed these four guys to go along on one of the five helicopters. And they got separated from General Lam on the second leg of this trip. They went too far to the west and got over an area of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was probably the heaviest concentration of anti-aircraft guns in the history of warfare. And they got shot down, and the helicopter was a fireball and fell on a mountainside. Of the other three helicopters, another one was shot down also. Two of the four were shot down, but General Lam was elsewhere and was not among those.
We're talking with Richard Pyle about his new book, Lost Over Laos, A True Story of Tragedy, Mystery, and Friendship. When we return from our break, we're also going to be joined by his collaborator, Horst Voss, on the line with us from London. In the headlines today from NPR News, in a further sign that the war in Iraq is winding down, the commander of U.S. operations went to Iraq's capital today. General Tommy Franks is in Baghdad to see the situation there firsthand. And the Pentagon today issued its first calculation of the price of the war so far. $20 billion. Also today, the Bush administration has announced that Assistant Secretary of State James Kelly will meet with Chinese and North Korean officials about North Korea's suspected nuclear weapons program. You can hear those stories later today from NPR's Scott Horsley and from Michelle Kellerman on All Things Considered. Again, more of your calls on Lost Over Laos when we come back from a break. 800-989-8255, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about a pilgrimage taken by two men who covered the Vietnam War. They recently returned to find out what happened to four of their colleagues, combat photographers, who were shot down in a helicopter over Laos in 1971. You're invited to join our discussion. What are your questions about this journey, about how a war is covered? And give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Richard Pyle, who was the AP's Saigon bureau chief for 5 years during the Vietnam War, is with us from our bureau in New York. And joining us now from his office in London is Horst Voss, AP's photo editor for Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. He covered the Vietnam War for 9 years and is the collaborator with Richard Pyle in Lost Over Laos. And Horst Voss, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good evening.
Why was it important for you to go back to find what you could of these four men?
Well, Vietnam for me was somehow the centerpiece of my professional career. And I worked with these four from the first day they came to Vietnam until their last, in one way or another. In Henri's case, he was one of the best photographers who was on the Associated Press team. Larry Bowles was an old-time friend from previous assignments and from 1962 onwards. And the others we met as efficient photographers of the competition, mainly UPI.
What were you looking for on that hillside?
We were looking for answers to questions. First of all, anything more that we could find out about what happened there. We knew the helicopter crashed. We didn't know what happened to the people on board except that they were dead. Possibility that because North Vietnamese soldiers had been in the immediate area that they had buried them somewhere. Found no evidence of that. What we did find, or what they found, that is the military search team, the Joint Task Force Full Accounting, which is the unit based in Hawaii that searches out American MIAs in Indochina. They found strips of film. They found pieces of camera, other things, which told us without any question that we were in the right place. And as far as Horst and I are concerned, we felt very much that this had enabled us to fulfill the mission that we set out to fulfill. That was to establish what happened there, and this really was the right place. As far as there being human remains or not was always a question, and after 27 years, not too much chance of that.
Well, Horst Voss, among the things that Richard said, a lot of camera equipment, among those, a Leica camera, which almost certainly, not absolutely certainly, but almost certainly belonged to Larry Burroughs. And I wonder, as a photographer yourself, what was it like to hold it?
Well, I never held it in my hand. I saw a photograph later on the 5 days we were at the scene. The camera hadn't been found yet. But of course, I remember Larry working with his Leica all the time. We both used Leicas, and I researched the history of this camera here in London and in Wetzlar, Germany. Through the number, we could find out that the camera was purchased by a news photographer in 1960. In London, and it was 1960 when Larry had lost his cameras in the Congo, where we met for the first time. He got into a scrap with Congolese demonstrators and had his equipment smashed and had to return to London to buy new equipment. And I'm pretty certain that this very Leica was this camera from 1960. Larry always took excellent care of his equipment. He polished it and oiled it and kept it in wonderful condition. With him, a camera would live that long.
We got an email from Tom Peck in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. He writes, the two photographs of the Vietnam War that to this day are burned into my memory are, one, the naked girl running down the road after a napalm attack on her village, and two, the South Vietnamese officer executing a young rebel. The first picture, he writes, shows the horror of war on non-combatants, and the second picture shows the inhumanity of man. And Richard Pyle, do we remember the words or the images?
Well, those are the two iconic photographs of the Vietnam War, and they both happen to be Associated Press photographs, the shooting in the street by Eddie Adams and the other one by Nick Ut, who still works for AP in Los Angeles. I think that the pictures are what people remember, and I have to say, and I say this often, that it's the frozen image, the still photo, that impresses people, not the television footage, because they don't remember seeing it on television. It goes in one eye and out the other. people don't remember that both of those incidents were filmed on television and were shown, but what they remember are those still photos.
Hmm. Let's take a call. Kathleen joins us now on the line from San Antonio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I'm calling to let you know and your guests know that I just attended a really effective exhibit this past weekend at the Texas Institute of Cultures here in San Antonio. They have a lot of photographs from photojournalists that were all killed in either the Korean or the Vietnam conflict. And the four subjects of your book, Mr. Pyle, are also shown here. And it was just, it was really affecting exhibit. And then they also had a special event one evening that I also attended. A woman from Rochester has choreographed a lot of these photos to be shown in a PowerPoint presentation accompanied by the Duraflay Requiem.
Hmm.
And it was magnificent. It was outstanding.
Yeah,
go ahead, Horst Voss. Yes,
it's a Mozart Requiem, and the exhibition Requiem by the photographers who died in Indochina and Vietnam was put together by Tim Page and myself, and I'm glad it's on show in San Antonio. The 20-minute music presentation out of computer with about 100 pictures was put together as an introduction by myself for opening speeches I made on many of these exhibitions. And what you may not know is that this exhibition may be temporarily in San Antonio, but it's permanently on view in Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City. The Vietnamese became partners in that Requiem quest many years ago, and they're the only ones that so far have been willing to show this picture presentation permanently.
That's what actually, this must be a different presentation because this one was by a woman who was the Duraflay Requiem. And I'd love to see your presentation also. The music of the Mozart would be very effective too. It was just truly outstanding, and I think it was really timely, you know, obviously in light of the situation that we have in Iraq right now. And I just wanted to just tell you all about that, and I thought it was just so wonderfully effective.
Horst Voss, I know you collected the photographs of the work of the people who were killed in Vietnam and Indochina into that book you mentioned, Requiem.
Yeah.
And you also arranged, I think, to have it left behind in Laos on that hillside.
Yes, he gave the book to the American team that excavated at the hillside, and on the last day, they all signed the book and buried it facing South Vietnam, standing around the hole that we had appointed. And I thought it was a very moving tribute to the photographers, but also a moving tribute for us by the Americans who worked hard there on this steep and hot hillside to find whatever there was left.
Well, thank you very much, Horst, for being with us today. We appreciate it. Horst Voss has won two Pulitzer Prizes for his photography. He's currently the AP photo editor for Europe, Africa, and the Middle East, and he was with us by phone from London. And wanted to read this email, Richard, from Michael Bodig in Salt Lake City. I was in Ho Chi Minh City in January, and while there visited the War Remnants Museum, it was interesting, though certainly rather one-sided in its interpretation of the events of the war. The exception was the exhibit dedicated to journalists who covered and were lost in the war. And I think that's what Horst was just talking about. The journalist exhibit was very well done and very moving and a great tribute to the journalists who covered the Vietnam War. And I think the figure you use in your book is 70 reporters and photographers killed over the years.
It's essentially 71, but there might be a couple of people whose names we didn't know in Cambodia. But that's the most accurate accounting I've ever had of the number killed. That includes people killed in Vietnam, all those in Cambodia, 20-some, most of whom just vanished, disappeared, unaccounted for. And these four guys were the only ones killed in Laos.
Hmm. Another caller. Let's go to Tom, who's with us from Sacramento.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm really impressed with the program. It's nice to hear people from the Vietnam era remembered. I was a helicopter pilot during that Lam Son 719 operation. I flew medical evacuation helicopters out of out of Camp Eagle for the 101st. We were stationed temporarily
it's been a while.
At Quezon.
That was the forward jump for the operation was Quezon.
Yes, that's correct. And we were tasked with medevacing the American units, which stayed basically in Vietnam in support of the South Vietnamese incursion into Laos. And then our unit would go over if pilots were shot down. We would go over and pick them up. And I got shot down by an anti-aircraft gun while I was going in to medevac out a GI who had been shot on the ground by the gun. The ground unit forgot to tell us that he was shot with an anti-aircraft gun when we were in to get him, and it was kind of a bad day.
What were you flying then, a Loach or a Huey?
I was a Huey. I was in a Huey. I was not the aircraft commander. I'd only been in country about a month.
You'll find that the 101st Airborne has a prominent place in this book. There are some amazing people that were flying in that operation, and a few of them are singled out for notice because of the things that they did there. And I recommend this book to anybody who's ever flown with the 101st Airborne because they might get something special out of it.
Oh, there was some incredible heroism. We had one guy who was trying to get into a place where people were wounded, and he had the C-130s drop flares, and he followed them through the mist because he couldn't see. And that's, if you know anything about aviation, especially helicopters, that's an incredible thing to do. And he was able to get in. It's astounding the things people did. There was a lot of heroism, I think, on both sides in that war.
Indeed, there was.
It's nice to be remembered.
Tom, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Email we got, this from Mark in Palo Alto. Do you think that because of the sheer number of war correspondents today and the availability to 24/7 imagery, the value of war photography, no matter how courageously obtained, has been reduced to a commodity in the eyes of the public? I think of the ability to channel surf during the recent conflict among at least half a dozen TV stations, all with profound images.
Well, I think that this has been an amazing experience just to sit back and look at this stuff out of Iraq. It's like you get combat fatigue and watching television. But to me, the embedded situation has its pluses and minuses. But the stuff that's been coming out, especially the photography, it's absolutely stunning stuff. Now, I don't know that there's been the iconic image that of the type that we mentioned in Vietnam. I haven't seen those. But I've seen a lot of high-quality, very good photography, and I've never seen so much of it that is so far forward and so graphic. I mean, these guys are right up there at the squad level and the platoon level, and you could do that in Vietnam, but you couldn't do it on a sustained basis, and there were never anywhere near as many people in the field as you have in Iraq. And I think one of the most interesting books that will come out of this war in Iraq will be the book that seriously analyzes the press media performance in this war and how this system worked or didn't work, and what the results were in terms of the journalistic product.
We're talking with Richard Pyle about Lost Over Laos, a true story of tragedy, mystery, and friendship. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And our next caller is Peter, who joins us from San Francisco.
Thank you. Great show. I'm actually a photographer in San Francisco, and I've always wanted to, in some way, thank all the war photographers and correspondents out there, because I find it to be just such an amazing job. My question was, and I certainly read your book, but my question was, I read a book some time ago, and there was a quote in the book that has been with me probably 10 years now, and the quote is that one crowded hour of glorious life is worth more than a life without a name. And I was wondering if you could point me back into the direction of the book, because I can't seem to find it, and I'd like to refer it to a number of people.
I have never heard that quote, but it certainly is a telling quote. I know exactly what the guy's talking about, because Vietnam was a special kind of a place for all of us that were there, and it had a magnetic appeal, and the kind of thing that you remember 30 years later, all the things in your life, things like that stand out. Mm-hmm. And if you take Vietnam and look upon it as 1 hour in your life, it probably was the most important and memorable hour that most of us had.
I'll certainly read your book, and the quote is one of those quotes that I can never forget. And every time I find myself in a bad situation, or I'm grumpy, or I'm unhappy, I always think to myself, "Wow, just that one crowded hour is pretty unbelievable. So I that will do it. But thank you for writing a book, and I'll certainly read it. And thank you to all those photographers out there for the amazing job that they've done.
You're welcome on behalf of all of them.
Okay.
Thanks.
Peter, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Richard, I wanted to ask you, one of the things that we're going to be discussing in the next segment of the program is the issue of armed media. And you mentioned earlier in telling the story of Henri and the battle at Antie, was that he was expected at that time, if it was necessary, to pick up a rifle and defend himself. What were the rules, written or unwritten, about carrying and or using weapons?
Well, there were no written rules about that. It was an ad hoc thing. There were some journalists that carried weapons because they were a little on the macho side and so forth. I personally felt it was a bad idea because it would compromise what you were doing, and in most cases, it'd take a very unusual situation, really desperate for you to have to need that weapon, and if it didn't need it all the time, it was just an encumbrance. There was no reason to carry a weapon. There were a few that did, but most journalists had their agendas did not include that, and only in the most desperate emergency situations would the military expect us to do anything like that. Frankly, it never happened to me in Vietnam. The only time it ever happened to me was on the Mexican border when I was with some customs people and the guy made me carry a weapon. But that's the only time that's ever happened in my 6.5 wars.
Did anybody who was a combat reporter or photographer in Vietnam or Indochina ever tell you a story about using a weapon? And if they did you believe them?
Well, yeah, there were occasions when it happened, I guess. There was one guy there's a story in the book about a UPI reporter who got out of the military in Vietnam and stayed there and became a photographer. He carried a weapon, and he was carrying an M16, and he was killed during the Second Tet uprising in Saigon. He was carrying a weapon, but he was killed, so it didn't do him any good.
Richard Pyle, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Neil. Pleasure talking to you.
Richard Pyle and Horst Voss collaborated to produce the new book, Lost Over Laos, a true story of tragedy, mystery, and friendship. And Horst Voss was with us from his home in London. Richard Pyle was with us from our bureau in New York. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the ethical challenges presented to journalists in the Iraq War and that issue that I just mentioned, armed media. Our telephone number, if you'd like to get in on that part of the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.